Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Fired Up, the hottest sports show in Central Ohio, the show where four sports fans talk sports for the fans. Our topics for this evening are the 2024 NFL Draft is nearly here. Who will Titans, Falcons, Bears, and Jets be taking in this year's draft? The quest for Lord Stanley Cups continue. The best of the best are announced for Team USA Basketball. The NBA playoffs are underway. Who will advance to round two? With that, I give you our assistant chief of our fire brigade, Colton Cow.
Thanks, Matt. We're here on a Thursday night. The chief is out taking care of some actual business with his actual job. So Matt and I are going to hold down the fort here in the studio on Thursday night. Like Matt said, we're going to continue on with our NFL draft talk. And when he says that the NFL draft is nearly here, we're close. A couple hours away from the draft here. So. It's literally right around the corner. So, you know, we're going to continue our segment here, you know, like we have for the last couple of weeks of kind of giving our thoughts on who each of the teams kind of here in the, you know, we'll wrap up with our segment that, you know, today or tonight, with, you know, rounding out the top 10 picks. So we got, you know, four teams on the slate. We've gotten, you know, the top six so far. So we're going to continue on with number seven, the Tennessee Titans sitting there at number seven. Matt, what's your thoughts here? What do the Titans do?
Yeah, you know, obviously the Titans are picking at seven for a reason. They're 6-11 last season. So, you know, they've got lots of needs. The biggest ones I see were offensive tackle, defensive end, defensive tackle, wide receiver, linebacker. So for me, you know, the most important thing I think they can do in this offseason is go out and get a great offensive lineman for their young rookie quarterback they had last year ago. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think with that said, I think they go out and they get Joe Alt, the offensive tackle from Notre Dame. Big guy, can move, just a great tackle. I think he'd be a great blocking guy out there for the young quarterback, and mm-hmm. give him a little protection and buy him some time. And we can really see what it's, I believe, Will Levis, what yep. he can do.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I gotta agree with you here at number seven. You know, I've got written down here, you know, offensive tackle, safety, also a big need for this Tennessee Titans team, but, you know, not usually a number seven pick that you're spending on a safety, right, unless it's, you know, once in a lifetime or, you know, once in a generational type talent. You know, here at number seven, you know, if the Titans stick with this seven pick. You know, I like the kid out of Notre Dame, 6'9", 321 pounder, you know, out of Notre Dame. You know, this is a Tennessee team that, you know, at the tackle position the last couple of years, you know, last year they had Andre Dillard, gave up 12 sacks, 42 QB pressures. Then they had a couple of, you know, rookies, couple of younger guys that, you know, didn't fare much better. Jalen Duncan and Dylan Radunez gave up 8 sacks and 28 QB pressure. So, yeah, definitely, you know, if Will Levis is the guy in Tennessee, you know, the key to success for, you know, any quarterback and, you know, a new quarterback or young quarterback in the league is keeping him upright, keeping him, you know, somewhat comfortable back in the pocket. So definitely I feel like offensive tackle for this Tennessee Titans team is critical, or offensive lineman in general is pretty critical. But, you know, there's nothing better than having a blindside guy to be able to, you know, keep you upright. I like the Titans to go offensive lineman here and take the kid out of Notre Dame. Then moving along, we got the Atlanta Falcons then picking next after Tennessee at number eight. They're coming off a season where they finished 7-10. I got a couple of needs here written down. You know, an edge rusher and a cornerback. I like the kid out of UCLA, the edge rusher out of UCLA, Laiatu Latu, 6'5", 259. Pounder, just a kid that's pretty athletic, got the full kind of toolbox for what you'd expect from a, you know, an edge rusher, you know, especially kind of can play kind of both defensive and kind of that outside linebacker position, just, you know, athletic. I mean, there are a couple of concerns, you know, with the kid, but, you know, a couple, you know, these two knocks on him are things that, again, something that he can't control or, you know, not in his control. He is coming off a major neck injury, had to have spinal fusion surgery, actually, And then wind up having to medically retire for a short amount of time before he did, you know, decide to come back and play football. And then another knock on top of him is his arm length. But, you know, again, something that his arm length is always going to be what his arm length is going to be. That's not anything that you're going to be able to change. So, but outside of those two things, the guy, yeah, has a high motor, has all the skills to be able to play, you know, that edge rusher position. You know, I think the Falcons, you know, go here. But, you know, I could also see them maybe going, you know, filling that cornerback position need as well. And there's some good ones out there, but I think they go the edge rusher, get a guy that can, you know, get you a sack when you need it. And I think they take the kid out of UCLA.
Yeah. You know, like you said, the Falcons were 7-10 a year ago, but you watch them play and they weren't a team that felt like a 7-10 team. Mm-hmm, I mean, they're in most of the games they played.
Right.
They built a good young offense. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a lot of weapons there. They just brought in their new quarterback in Kirk Cousins.
Right.
So I agree. I think this pick's going to go to the defensive side. And, and I think edge rusher, defensive end type position is their biggest need.
Yeah.
I went a little different direction here. Yeah. I went Dallas Turner, the defensive end out of Alabama. Mm-hmm. You can't go wrong with his Bama guys.
Right,
they get to the pros and they produce.
Right.
I think he's a great choice here for this Falcons team that really needs a defense to go along with that offense. And they could be not far away from being a playoff contender.
Oh, yeah. And in a division that's been, you know, pretty weak, you know, with the NFC South, with the Saints, the Panthers, you know, the Falcons there, the Buccaneers, you know, the last couple of years, it seems like it's been getting in the playoffs, winning that division. You can have a losing record or pretty close to having a losing record and still make, you know, win the division and get into the playoffs. So, you know, the Falcons are right there on the cusp. You know, I think the big thing that was missing for them is, you know, consistent QB play. Yeah. You know, they hope that they've, you know, spent the money this offseason and bring in Kirk Cousins, and that's the missing piece. But then, you know, you always, you know, like you talked, the last couple of drafts, they have used kind of their top 10 picks, their, you know, top picks on getting some young offensive weapons.
Right.
You know, it might be time to start thinking about the defense. And, you know, I think that's why they go some form of defensive player here. And yeah, I think that there's, again, a lot of edge rushers, a lot of guys out there that can all fill the need and fit the need. You know, so they're definitely a lot of guys that I think the Falcons can't go wrong if they go, you know, who they pick. So we'll see what happens. Then at number nine, we got a repeat picker. You know, the Bears obviously hold the number one pick, and, you know, to nobody's surprise or whatever, we, you know, pretty much across the board picked Caleb Williams to get their franchise QB off the board, get that out of the way. And then, you know, from there, you know, what do the Bears decide to do? I think it's, you know, they hold the cards at this number nine position. You know, they get their franchise QB. You know, another need that I kind of had written down for them is another edge rusher to pair with Montez Sweat that they picked up from the Commanders. So here is where I have Dallas Turner going. You know, I think off the board, I think, you know, things could flip-flop there. But yeah, I have Dallas Turner, you know, the edge rusher from Alabama going to the Bears, 6'3", 247-pound, you know, kind of linebacker, defensive end, you know, kind of hybrid there. The thing that really stands out to me that this is, you know, kind of different, or, you know, maybe something that's, you know, sets him apart from the other guys in this particular category is that while he was at Alabama in the, you know, the couple seasons that he played at Alabama, he actually dropped into coverage almost 250 snaps as a linebacker, which, you know, in today's NFL where it's, you know, pass heavy and, you know, linebackers are now matching up with running backs and matching up with tight ends and things like that. It's almost become a very hybrid position where you're expected as a linebacker to be able to be almost like a cornerback, but also be like a defensive end to be able to get to the QB. So I think that's something that separates Dallas Turner in this respect, that, yeah, he's not a guy that not just going to bull rush and get you a sack, but he can also drop into coverage and he can help you out, you know, on that, you know, close to the line against some of those tight ends and running backs coming out of the backfield. I think the Bears would, you know, if he's still there, I think the Bears would be getting a heck of a pick if they go, you know, the kid out of Alabama.
Yeah, and, you know, you think the Bears might have learned something last year from the Texans, but they did the kind of the same recipe,
quarterback,
defensive end.
Right, yep.
You know, you saw what that did for the Texans. So, you know, not a bad choice here, but, you know, I'm looking at this, and I obviously have Turner already off my board.
Right.
So I think they stay on the offensive side, okay. And they get their new rookie quarterback a weapon at wide receiver. Yeah. I like Malik Nabers to be the wide receiver that's left here. Speedy guy.
Yeah.
You know, Caleb Williams has a rocket launcher for an arm. Mm-hmm. He can really chuck that thing out there.
Right.
Get a guy like Nabers who can just sprint down the field. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, we could see some thunder and lightning out of that combination.
Yeah,
for sure.
Absolutely. A Tyreek Hill, Tyreek Hill, Patrick Mahomes type combo that we saw, several years ago. You know, yeah, for me, you know, on our last show, I have Nabers already off the board at this point. But yeah, I could definitely see, you know, the wide receiver position for Chicago. It always, you know, never hurts to have another weapon for, you know, a rookie QB to throw to. So definitely if at all possible, you know, we kind of, you know, on the last show kind of went a run of wide receivers off the board with our, you know, previous picks. But I think if any of these guys potentially slip, I think the Bears maybe, you know, somewhat, maybe don't take what they need, but take best available in this position, or, you know, something that, you know, again, never have too many weapons on the offensive side of the ball, especially bringing in a fresh QB, you know, that's never played a snap in the NFL yet. So we'll see what the Bears decide to do. And, you know, things always change because we're approaching this as if there's not going to be really any trades in these first 10 picks. Yeah. We know that clearly almost never happens, you know, usually that within the first, you know, 5 to 8 picks or whatever, you usually have, having a trade in there. And with so many teams that are quote unquote quarterback needy at this point, we could see, quite a bit of chaos, you know, early on in the draft. So, obviously that throws a wrench into all of this. Right. If we get, you know, massive chaos in that sense, but well, then to round out then the top 10, we got the New York Jets, my team here to round out the top 10, another team that finished 7-10 last year. For me, I've got written down really the only thing that the team really needs at this point is, you know, another solid defensive lineman, which it's kind of crazy to think about because I feel like all they've done is draft defensive linemen the last several years or defensive players. But for me, I think that they're going to go, you know, outside of team need, I think that they're going to also draft for if they stay in this position. I think that they draft for depth in this point. I like the kid out of Penn State, the offensive tackle, Olamue Fashanu from offensive tackle, the Penn State, 6'6", 312 pounder. Now, you know, most Jets fans or people would be saying, well, the Jets signed two stud offensive tackles in the offseason in the free agency. But both those guys are kind of on the wrong side of 30 years old at this point and have not really played a full season the last, you know, several seasons, very injury prone. You can never have enough offensive linemen just because of how often they're on the field. You know, one bad roll up on the knee and they're done for the season. And, you know, you got to throw in somebody in there that, you know, has no experience. So I think, you know, this is a team in the Jets that obviously has a 40 plus something year old quarterback that literally played 4 snaps last year. The key this season is keep the guy upright, keep him on the field. Let's get through the season and see what we can do. No better way to do that than to have plenty of offensive linemen out there to mix up different lineups and have, you know, the potential to protect your QB out there. So that's why I like for the Jets to go with that number 10 pick. Matt, what do you think?
You know, looking at some of what the experts think the Jets need, a lot of people pointed out tight end, safety, wide receiver, linebacker, or cornerback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not real sold on why they need a wide receiver. You know, they've got Garrett Wilson who break out a couple years ago and some other good, you know, young receivers there.
Mm-hmm.
I think their biggest need at an offensive standpoint is a really good tight end.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it might be a little early here at 10 to go tight end. So watch for a trade down here, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Jets would really love to get their hands on Brock Bowers, the tight end out of Georgia. I think he'd be a great fit there, a weapon for Rodgers to use in the short passing game.
Right.
I mean, it'd be a nice fit there.
Yeah. We'll see. I saw, you know, as I was kind of doing my research, it was, a lot of people it was an alternate, you know, offensive lineman or Brock Bowers was coming up a lot of the different draft boards that I was looking at as I was kind of doing my research. And, you know, I don't think it would be a hateful pick, you know, as a Jets fan, you know, I would be okay with it. I mean, it's a guy that is a wide receiver in a tight end's body. Right. You know, this guy, yeah, is one of the, probably the next great, you know, tight ends in the league as far as pass catching goes. You know, not much of a blocker, obviously, but, you know, in today's NFL, you know, tight ends, it really just depends on scheme and things like that. But add another weapon again on the offensive, you know, offensive side of the ball, never hurts, another person to throw to. And, you know, we've seen what that's done for Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, the connection that they've had there, you know, other tight ends, Antonio Gates, and, you know, all the big Jimmy Graham, all of those that have been, you know, great in this NFL and really helped out some of these franchise QBs really, you know, excel their career with having, you know, a guy that can catch you, get you at least a first down. So
I will say another thing to consider for the Jets that wasn't on their needs at the time when a lot of people were looking at this now is quarterback. They just traded away their backup there and Zach Wilson.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and Rodgers isn't getting any younger.
He's
got a year, two, maybe three tops left in him.
Right. Yeah. You know,
do they maybe look to reach for a quarterback of the future
and
a guy like Penix or Bo Nix or something like that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it would be interesting to see what they decide to do. Do they take a pick? You know, it's always interesting because, what do you decide to do this early on? Because it's always like you spent a top 10 pick on a quarterback.
Yeah, stockpile them.
Yeah, and it's like you don't usually draft a guy with the top 10 pick and he sits on the bench for a year. It's usually – you're drafting him this high, you expect him to get in the game at some point. Right. So it's one of those things that
Rodgers may cry if that happens to him again.
Exactly. So I think, you know, I don't disagree with you. They may go QB. I don't know if it'll be this early. You know, that would be somewhat of a surprise to me. I think that they may look at that maybe day two, day three, you know, whatever we, you know, may look at, you know, getting a backup because at this point, having a solid backup is just as good as having a solid starting quarterback in today's league because, you know, of how many games that they play and, you know, again, you're one injury, you know, Rodgers is a perfect example, you know, one injury away from having to start a guy that may or may not have ever played a snap in the NFL. So, definitely, you know, some flexibility I think that this New York Jets team has. And I think at the same time, that's why you may also see them trade this pick because I think a lot of the guys that they could possibly want at this 10 pick could probably be still there a little bit, you know, maybe a few picks back and see what they can do to compile more picks later on in the draft to, you know, continue to just get depth at this point. So we'll see what happens, but we're only, you know, a short, you know, hour or so away from seeing what, you know, the next NFL stars, you know, who's the next NFL star on, you know, these different teams. You know, a lot of stuff that can happen. I mean, I was getting notifications out the wazoo today about, you know, teams wanting to do this, teams moving up here, moving this. Well, they want to trade with this and the, you know, so it seems like there's a lot of maybe it's all fluff at this point, you know, just people throwing out there just to, you know, try to mix people up and get other teams thinking about, maybe I should pick this guy, you know, whatever. But
I was listening on ESPN this morning. They said the draft is one of the best things if you've got the right ear of the right people that you can actually make some money in Vegas. If you're hearing somebody's moving up before Vegas hears they're moving up, and you know the pick, like you can kind of stump the Swami there and make some bucks.
Exactly.
It's pretty interesting. You got to be – you got to know who to listen to.
In the know.
The right sources.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to it. You know, Detroit, you know, getting there. You know, Detroit, Michigan getting their opportunity to host the draft this year. You know, I was watching a little bit, you know, the pre-show on TV. It looks like there's lots of people showing out there. So Rock, I think the weather was perfect up there. I mean, not super warm, but, you know, at the same time, not snowing either. So that was good. So I think it's going to be fun for the Detroit. Lots of blue up there in Detroit. Lots of Honolulu blue in the crowd. So
we'll send this thing to Florida or something so we can go.
Yeah. I got to get it back to some warmer weather. So all right. Well, then moving from football over to winter quote unquote winter sport. you know, here we are in April and into May and June talking about hockey. You know, we started to talk a little bit about the playoffs last week. So playoffs are underway. Most series are about, you know, halfway through in the first round, you know, two games, one game under their belt. Some teams, you know, three games under their belt. So we'll just, you know, quickly run through each of the series, just kind of give, you know, a quick update on where we're at and just, you know, what we think is how it's going to play out, you know, going into the second round. So starting with the Florida Birds there, you know, the two Florida teams that, you know, play so well, even though, you know, you wouldn't think hockey'd be that great in Florida, but right. Here we are. We got the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Panthers up 2-0 in this series. Mm-hmm. You know, took game one and game two in their home stadium. Won 3-2 in both games. Game two going to overtime to win it. But yeah, I guess to me, I'm a little bit surprised. I mean, I know that me and the Chief last week thought that the Tampa Bay would be pulling off the upset in this one, or thought that this series would be. I mean, it's been close, obviously 3-2. It's, you know, been a goal in each, you know, separated by a goal in each game. But yeah, I thought, you know, Tampa Bay would be able to steal at least one of the games at the Panther Stadium, but, you know, just have not been able to get over the hump and beat this Florida team. You know, I predicted, yeah, possibly, you know, I still liked the Panthers. I like Tampa Bay. You know, I expected this game to go to seven games.
I think it will be a series. Right, these are a veteran team in Tampa Bay. They always play well. But right. Tell you what, something about Sergei Bobrovsky against Tampa Bay. He seems to have their number. He really plays well in net against them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's when it comes playoff time, it's all about goalie play.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, he always starts off well in the playoffs, but then –
kind of
second
off.
Round, third right. round, all right. of a sudden he's nowhere to be found. So,
right, right.
You know, I don't like Florida's chances to go a long way, but mm-hmm. I think they'll take the series, especially now up two games to none.
Yeah. You talk about the experience there. I mean, it's Tampa Bay, obviously always a staple. You know, this is a team that just a handful of years ago won back-to-back Stanley Cups and then made it back a third time and, you know, fell short of winning a back-to-back-to-back. And the Panthers last year made a surprise run to the Stanley Cup Finals last year. And they got 15 skaters that are on the team from that last year's team. So they still got lots of experience. Again, both teams, both, you know, experience on both sides, you know, for Florida and Tampa Bay. We'll see what happens. I mean, this Tampa Bay team is one of the hottest teams since March. They've averaged almost four goals a game since March, which is one of the best in the NHL. You know, they've been top 10 in goals, you know, goals allowed, top five in power play. So, you know, I expect the Tampa Bay to right the ship. They have the ability to do so, got the veteran leaders, you know, got Nikita Kucherov, who's, you know, in the running for the MVP mm-hmm. award. You know, so they got the opportunity, just got to, find a way to get, you know, just one more goal in there than you know the Panthers do. So they're right there. One shot to go their way, then, you know, whatever, and they could be over the hump. So we'll see what Tampa Bay is able to do, if they're able to get this series, you know, going back to Tampa Bay now, see if they're able to get the series turned around. Sticking in the East then, we got the New York Rangers taking on the Washington Capitals. Also a 2-0 series in favor of the Rangers. Game one, the Rangers decimated the Capitals 4-1. Game two, the Rangers pull out a close one 4-3. Matt, what's your thoughts on this series so far?
Yeah, you know, the Rangers are just too much for the Capitals. Yep. The Capitals kind of limped their way into the playoffs. Yep. And, you know, you got to love it for Ovechkin that he's still hanging around. Right, right. He made his way to the playoffs. But
yeah,
I think this thing's going to be over in short order, if not a sweep, close enough, a gentleman's sweep. I think at most Washington gets a game out of this deal.
Yeah. I know that Dad and I both thought, five games. I think I said clean sweep last week. You hit the nail on the head. This is a Washington Capitals team that has a minus 37 goal differential.
Yeah, not good.
The worst ever of any playoff team to ever make to the playoffs in NHL history ever. So to me, I remember talking about it last week. It was like, how the heck did this Capitals team even make it into the playoffs at this point? Because it was tough to me. You know, I kind of was breaking down each of the teams to try to find what does this Washington Capitals team even do well? And I thought, you know, I watched, you know, a little bit of game two, and I, you know, compared to game one, the Capitals, you know, the Capitals in game one looked like they had laid down and died. You know, not, they didn't really come out with any kind of spark.
Right.
Game two, they came out. I mean, they were the aggressive team. They, you know, they came out, righted the ship, I thought, in game two, and were up. You know, they scored the first goal, but then the Rangers, it wasn't 30 seconds later, the Rangers came back, hit, scored a goal. Washington scored game, you know, goal number two.
Right.
Rangers came right back. So it was just like, I felt like game two, we really saw the Capitals give it all they could give, and they still came up short. I just think that, yeah, this Rangers team is on a mission. Obviously finished with the best record in hockey this year. I think they're on a mission to prove something. You know, this is a team, you know, that has all the right pieces to make a playoff run and a Stanley Cup run at this at this point. Well, continuing on with the Eastern Conference, we got the two staples here. The Boston Bruins taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Bruins now lead the series 2-1 after winning Game 3 last night. So Game 1, the Bruins got a win 5-1. Game 2, the Maple Leafs got a win 3-2. And then last night in Game 3, the Bruins took it 4-2. You know, yeah, these are two heavyweights going at it, two teams that, yeah, we're used to seeing play, you know, in the playoffs and, you know, have firepower on both sides. Obviously, Austin Matthews for the Maple Leafs, David Pastrnak for the Boston Bruins there. You know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how this series plays out. I mean, I think I predicted the Bruins. I expected this one to go seven games. I predicted the Bruins to take it in seven games. You know, having that home ice advantage to me is going to be the difference in this one. I think for the Maple Leafs to figure it out or to, you know, right the ship, if you will, they got to keep it close. Right. The Bruins, throughout the regular season, in these tight, close games, they have found ways to lose.
Yeah.
And so I think, like you saw in game two where the Maple Leafs win 3-2,
right.
I think that's where the Maple Leafs are going to have the success is keeping it, you know, maybe the Maple Leafs don't want to see it that way because always a tight game, it's always like you're on the edge of your seat or whatever. They'd rather see them just blow out the Bruins and let's be done.
Well, we'd all love that.
right. But I think in reality, keeping it close in those tight, close games, I think that's where the Maple Leafs have the advantage over the Bruins.
Right.
You saw in game one and game three, the Bruins somewhat, you know, took the advantage there, you know, kind of quote-unquote blew out the Maple Leafs. I think for the Maple Leafs to win this series, they gotta keep it close.
Well, and you know, Boston's been a really weird team this year. Like, they started off the season, best team in hockey. Mm-hmm. Nobody could touch them.
Right.
Then they kind of went through a stage where they weren't playing all that well. They lost them, but I want to say a bunch of games.
Right.
Not, you know, still one of the best teams in hockey, so it wasn't a ton. But,
right.
I mean, it's just they went through that weird stage where they weren't playing that great.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like Boston just gets disinterested at times or something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to believe playing against a team like Toronto that that could happen.
Right.
They got to be careful. They got to stay on top of their game because if they let Toronto get into this thing and make it close, you know, that could be bye-bye Boston.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I agree with you. I think this thing goes 6-7 games, and it's going to be a heck of a series.
Yeah, absolutely. Then the last series in the East, we got the Hurricanes and the New York Islanders. Hurricanes up 2-0 in this series. Game one, the Hurricanes won 3-1. Game two, Hurricanes win 5-3. Again, an Islanders team that I think is up against, you know, way out of their league against a Carolina team that is one of the best in hockey on the defensive side. And so, you know, if the Islanders struggle to score as it is already, and then you're playing one of the best, if not the best defensive team in hockey, good luck at this point. And I, you know, again, a series that in game two, I felt the Islanders were up, I think they might have been up 3-1 in that game and then let the Hurricanes come back and win 5-3. So in game two, an opportunity where the Islanders felt like they probably played their best hockey or pretty close to their best hockey. they still came out with a loss. So I think the Islanders are in real trouble here. I think the Hurricanes are kind of a dark horse to potentially win this whole entire Stanley Cup, mm-hmm. Just because of how tough defense. And how great they are on the defensive side.
Yeah, like you said, this time of year, defense wins championships, especially in hockey. It's all about goal play, defense. You hold that other team to one or two goals. Mm-hmm. Odds are most nights you're winning in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
Because it's so amped up. I mean, mm-hmm. teams score three, four right. goals. That's just how it goes in the playoffs.
Right, right.
So to see that great defense of Carolina, they're already up 2-0.
Yeah.
This is probably looking like a sweep in this first round for Carolina.
Yeah, yeah. And I think this is a Carolina team. They don't care if they win 1-0.
Right.
They'll be fine with that. Like they've done that plenty enough times, and so they're comfortable. So it they're comfortable in somewhat lower scoring games, or you know, tighter, somewhat higher scoring games as well, just because they know that they, when it comes down to it, when they need to get a stop, they can get that stop that they need. So. All right. Well, then moving out west, we got the Vancouver Canucks taking on the Nashville Predators series. It's actually tied 1-1 currently.
Yeah, this West is pretty competitive mm-hmm. this year.
Yeah, it's wide open. I think you know anybody's game to you know potentially make it out of the West. But Canucks, you know, it's been kind of two blowout games. You know, game one, Canucks won 4-2. Game two, the Predators win 4-1. You know, and I think it was kind of weird. You know, if I remember correctly, the betting odds were they liked this game to go 7 games, mm-hmm. Even though you know, as far as the points go and the standings go, I mean, that Vancouver obviously the better team in this matchup. They still liked it to go 7 games, but you know, ultimately like the Canucks to come out with a win in the series. You know, it's gonna be interesting, I think. For the Canucks, game one, their goalie Thatcher Demko, who won 35 games this year, had a almost 92% save percentage. Went game one, gave up only 2 goals. They get a win. Didn't play in game two, and you know look what happened. You know 4-1 in that one. So I think they got to figure out a way how to keep him on the ice. You know and you know try to get him in there and play as much as he can. But yeah, this Predators team is a dangerous team as a wild card for this Canucks team. You know, since February 17th, there's only been one team that's won more games than this Nashville team, and that's the Carolina Hurricanes. So they definitely are coming into this playoffs on a positive note, a high note. Mm-hmm. This Canucks team, not a lot of playoff experience. They've actually, again, missed the playoffs 7 of the past 8 seasons.
Yeah.
So a lot of the guys that are on this team, you know, as well as they played in the regular season, don't have a ton of playoff experience here. And I'm not saying that Nashville does, but again, Nashville
as a franchise, yeah, they've been there a
yeah,
lot
right,
recently.
Right,
with
yeah,
some
Nashville,
good success.
But Nashville's playing; they got nothing to lose. Yeah. They, you know, they're the you know lower seeded team. They're coming in with you know somewhat low to no expectations.
Right.
This Canucks team got to be careful now right. going back to, you know, going to Nashville here for 2 games. We'll see what, yeah. you know, what happens.
And I mean, the Canucks, if they wanted to win the series, did one of the most egregious things you can do. You lose one at home.
Right. Right.
That's when the series starts, when the home team loses the game.
Yeah.
So you're letting Nashville stick around. They're like you said, they're playing with house money.
Yeah.
You know, they're going balls to the wall. They're
right.
playing as hard as they can.
Right.
You know, like I said, they're a franchise that's been there, done that. Their fans right. expect to win.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So I think now going back to Nashville.
Yeah, that tough environment.
I like Nashville's
tough, yeah,
environment.
Yeah,
the chance to win a couple games there. All
yeah,
of a sudden,
yeah.
they got the lead in the series.
right, right.
Look
Canucks
out.
Are on the you know outside looking in or you yeah. know on the bottom of the hill looking up, you
right.
know, whatever. And it's, again, you let.
And for a team who hasn't been there, that's
right.
when it sets in.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh,
man. What are we doing?
Yeah.
yeah. What are we doing? Yeah. How did we get here?
Right.
You know, why, you know, do we even deserve to be here?
Yeah.
You know, that doubt starts to play in there. So definitely the Canucks got their hands full, you know, going into game three tomorrow night. So we'll see if they're able to get things corrected or, you know, if we're looking at a major first round upset here in the first round. Then continuing on, you talk about upsets, mm-hmm. the Dallas Stars, I think the best team out West,
mm-hmm.
Taking on the defending champs in the Vegas Golden Knights, Golden Knights up 2-0 already
right.
in the series, won both games in Dallas, now going back to Vegas, We know what the environment is like in Vegas. Dallas is in trouble.
Yes, they're
in trouble because game one, the Golden Knights won a close game 4-3. Mm-hmm. Game two, they beat them 3-1. I think Dallas is in major trouble here.
Well, it seems like nothing phases these Vegas teams. I mean,
they're first year in
franchise history, right. And they're going to the Stanley Cup.
Right.
Like, you know, they don't care. They're out playing hockey.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I think they know they have to do enough to get into the playoff, and once they're in,
look out.
Right. We're playing our best hockey of the season.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, this isn't looking good for Dallas. The best team in the West. Looks like they may be going fishing
on the outside looking in here. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it comes down to goalie play. Mm-hmm. You know, they had one of the best goalies in hockey in the regular season in Jake Oettinger, 35-14-4, about a 91% save percentage. So far through the first two games, he's got two losses, giving up 6 goals, and almost an 85% save percent. Yeah, so he's almost 6% lower, you know, save percentage wise than what he was in the regular season. I think he's the X factor for this, and he has been the last several years for this, you know, Dallas team. They go as he goes.
Right.
If he plays well, this Dallas team, look out. He doesn't play well, they're in the hole that they're in. So, and I mean, I'm not putting it all on him because, again, you got defensemen for a reason. They got to somewhat, you know, stop the guys from getting to the goalie in this in this sense. But you know, at the same time, you know, we're all a team here, but I think it really does fall on Jake Oettinger at this point. He's got to
wake up and get back to his former
because trail. Like you said, we go back to Vegas. That crowd is crazy in Las Vegas. You know, as crazy as it might sound, they're a new franchise within the last, you know, five to 10 years. And you would have thought that, this Vegas team has been playing hockey for 50 years.
The best thing for them, it doesn't matter fans or not. People are in Vegas.
Right,
They're coming. It's just part of the fun of being in Vegas.
Exactly, Even if you're not a Vegas fan, I'm in Vegas. Let's go catch a hockey game. Yeah. So, but this Vegas team looks good. I mean, this is a team that, again, won the Stanley Cup last year, brought back almost their entire team from last year, and then made some trades, you know, in the offseason and some trades at the trade deadline. This is a dangerous team. So, again, West beware, because the Golden Knights are coming.
They're back again.
Continuing on with the West, two familiar foes going at it, the Edmonton Oilers and the Los Angeles Kings. You know, two teams that have actually faced off against each other, I believe, the last three playoffs, you know, previous playoffs. So make it a fourth in this one. And what do you know? The series is tied 1-1. And you talk about fireworks and points. Game one, the Oilers won 7-4. Last night, we got an overtime victory by the Kings, 5-4. Looking at the past, you know, playoffs, you know, against each other, it hasn't changed. It's been high scoring. It's been lots of goals, whatever. Again, two familiar foes going at it that have matched up against each other a lot. But, you know, now series switches going to L.A. with the Kings. What do you think? You think the Kings can, and so far in those playoff series, Edmonton's come out on top in every playoff series in the past. You think the Kings can right the ship, you know, exercise their demons and beat this Edmonton team?
I think Edmonton's got too much talent on this roster. I just, you know, the Kings are, I think, looking at their record here, the worst team in the West that made it in, 44-27-11. I think Edmonton rights the ship and gets it done, but six or seven games for sure. This is going to be a back and forth series against two hated rivalries.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, I think that on paper, the Oilers, this shouldn't even be a series. I mean,
they can score too much. Score will.
And they, you know, if you remember correctly, they made a coaching change back in November. Ever since they made that, they have been a total juggernaut in the NHL. They've scored the third most goals and given up the fifth least amount of goals. So, you know, I think that's the difference between Edmonton teams of past is that this team can play defense too. You know, that we knew they could always score. They've always had Leon Draisaitl. They've always had Connor McDavid that can score a goal when you need it. But the difference has always been, what do they do on the defense? You know, it's only going to go so far. You can only score so many goals a game before you run into a team that
can score right with you.
Yeah, can score right with you. And then what do you do? Right. And so I think the difference for me is this Edmonton team, a little bit more dedicated on that defensive side. I think this series going to be a close one, going to be a battle, but I like Edmonton.
Los Angeles can't keep up on the offensive side for a 7-game series.
Right. Yeah. It drains you, to play defense against a team that attacks like the Oilers do. So I do like the Oilers to take it, but I think it could go, could go the distance in this one. Then finishing up in the West, we got, the Winnipeg Jets, taking on the, Colorado Avalanche. Another series that's tied 1-1. The Jets won it game 1, 7-6. In game 2, the Avalanche win it 5-2. Now going to Colorado for game 3. Matt, what's your thoughts on this series so far?
Even though technically Colorado is the underdog in this series, you gotta like their chances here. They got the veteran savvy. They've been around, playoff team year in, year out.
Right.
Winnipeg hasn't been here near as much. You talked about the 2 games they've already played. Colorado's scoring at will. You're putting up almost 6 goals a game.
Right, that's dangerous.
If they keep on that pace, there's no way Winnipeg can keep up for a 7-game series. Mm-hmm. I like Colorado's chances to win this thing.
Right.
Again, probably another 6-7-game series.
Right.
I mean, like I said, these are a lot of series showing 1-1.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be back and forth for a lot of these teams.
Yeah.
Vegas might be getting a lot of rest after this first round.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Dominating in convincing fashion in the Western Conference. But Colorado has found success at getting to one of the best, if not the best goalie this year in hockey in Connor Hellebuyck. 37-19-4, a 92% save percentage. But so far through these two games, he's obviously got a 1-1 record. He's allowed 10 goals and he's given up save percentage about 87%, so about 5% lower than what his regular season save percentage was. I don't know. I don't like the Jets' chances here. I mean, they won game 1, but heck, they had to score 7 goals to do it. That to me, this Jets team, that's not sustainable in my opinion. I think we go 5 games. I think the Avalanche win the next 3 games here and take the series. I think the Jets are in real trouble, a team that hasn't had a ton of playoff success here recently, only made it out of the first round since 2018 one time. Obviously, this Avalanche team has had success, has won a Stanley Cup, have a lot of those same guys. I think Colorado takes a win here, takes the next three games and takes the series 4-1 in this one. I just think, too much experience, too much firepower from that Colorado team.
For sure.
All right. Well, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. Stick with us. Going to talk a little NBA basketball when we get back.
This podcast is sponsored by Podbean. Podbean is the easiest way to create your own podcast. We use Podbean to host Fired Up. Download the free Podbean podcast app to start, record, and publish your very own podcast in minutes. Podbean provides everything you need to run your podcast, and you can record and publish episodes directly from the app on your phone. Download the free Podbean app today. That's Podbean. Head on over to Podbean at www.podbean.com and use the code PODCAST21 for your first 30 days of podcast hosting for free. Check it out.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. Like I mentioned before the break, going to talk a little bit of NBA news the rest of the way. But before we talk NBA playoffs, wanted to give a quick sound bite here. Team USA, that's going to be representing, the U.S. in this year's Summer Olympics in Paris, France. They announced their, men's basketball roster last week the past couple of weeks. So we wanted to just really quick, go through the list and, kind of give our thoughts and what we think. I mean, obviously the expectation is always gold or bust. So, it really doesn't matter who they put on this team. You expect to win gold every year or so. But the head coach, for this Team USA team, Steve Kerr, the, current head coach of the Golden State Warriors, his assistant coaches, Mark Few, who's the head coach at Gonzaga University, Tyronn Lue, who's the head coach at the Los Angeles Clippers. And then Eric Spoelstra, the head coach for the Miami Heat, or his, you know, three assistant coaches. Matt, you got the players you want to talk about there?
Yeah, I'll run them down. Yeah. The headliners of the group are three-time Olympic champion Kevin Durant of the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. Got the NBA's all-time leading scorer in LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers. Rounded out with Bam Adebayo of Miami Heat, Devin Booker, another of the Phoenix Suns, Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors, AD, Anthony Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers, Anthony Edwards, Minnesota Timberwolves, Joel Embiid, Philadelphia 76ers, Tyrese Halliburton, the Indiana Pacers, Drew Holiday of the Boston Celtics, Kawhi Leonard of the LA Clippers, and Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Mm-hmm. This is a different bunch of guys, really. You know, went kind of big with this lineup. Yeah. It's not the typical run and gun kind of Team USA we're used to in the past.
Right.
The thing that worries me about this group of guys, though, a lot of injury history with some of these guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, most recently you got AD. Mm. You know, he's been hurt a lot for the Lakers.
Right.
And then Joel Embiid right now got a knee problem battling that through the playoffs.
Right.
So, you know, Devin Booker, he's been injured in and out for the Phoenix Suns all year long. KD, the same.
Right.
LeBron, he's no spring chicken.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Steph Curry also, you know, on the wrong side of age and time here.
Right.
You get a young, athletic team in the Olympics going against these guys.
Yeah.
And I could see disaster for Team USA. I mean, a lot of great players for Team USA. But, man, the rest of the world's really catching up in basketball. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, like I mentioned, it's always, you know, gold or bust for Team USA, no matter who they put there on the roster. You know, it'll be interesting because, obviously, you know, a lot of the guys that are on this team are a lot of the same guys we'll be talking about here shortly in the NBA playoffs. And the Olympics starts somewhat right after the NBA playoffs are finished. We're getting ready for, you know, the Olympics. So health will, you know, come into, you know, what do we got? You know, fatigue, you know, wearing down, you know, and again, a lot of these guys are not spring chickens anymore. I mean,
your two best guards are guys who are projected to be in the championship game.
Mm-hmm, right. So,
I mean, just, you're going to be exhausted.
Right. Exactly. So we'll see what this Team USA team, you know, can do. Obviously, again, expected to always win it, you know, no matter what. But just a couple of quick notes about, you know, the makeup of the roster. You got, you know, guys, 12 NBA All-Stars. So, you know, guys on here that every single one of them has made at least one appearance in the All-Star game. Four NBA MVPs and six NBA championships amongst all these guys that, you know, have made it, you know, are playing in the, you know, playing here for Team USA. So, obviously, a lot of hardware individually, a lot of hardware team-wise for all the guys that are playing here. You know, amongst these guys, we got guys that have made 11 Olympic appearances and have won 10 gold medals already. So, yeah, a lot of hardware, both on the international level and, you know, just the NBA level as well.
Right.
You know, so we'll see. Obviously, yeah, we got a couple of months before the Summer Olympics start, but you know, we'll see what this, if the makeup of this roster is the same makeup, because obviously they have substitutions. They have guys, obviously somebody goes down, they're not going to not take a full roster of guys. They're going to sub somebody out and bring somebody else in. So we'll see what they, you know, if the makeup that we have currently is the same makeup that we'll have going into the Summer Olympics, because health is going to play a big thing with a lot of these guys on this roster playing in the NBA playoffs.
Do they have any idea who the pool of guys are that would replace?
I don't know if I saw anything about kind of the quote unquote reserves, if you will. You know, I will probably get a good glimpse of that because I think that they bring a bunch of them to like summer camp or, you know, kind of their exhibition camp or whatever, where they have a lot of scrimmages against, you know, some of those other guys and, you know, to get them tuned up and ready to go, whatever. But I didn't see anything or not aware of kind of the pool of who would be the next guy in line guys in line if there would be a replacement that's needed. So, all right. Well, then going to head over to the NBA playoffs, you know, kind of in line with the NHL playoffs. The NBA playoffs are underway. I'm going to start over in the Eastern Conference and going to start with the best team in the East and the best team in the NBA, the Boston Celtics, matching up again another familiar foe in the Miami Heat. Yeah. This is a Celtics and Heat team that have matched up in the playoffs now 4 of the last 5 years, at least, you know, somewhere in the rounds, first, second, you know, somewhere first, second conference finals, you know, whatever. So, again, familiarity with these two teams, you know, and after, you know, a game one that saw the Celtics win in convincing fashion, here come those pesky Heat that just won't go away. Right. So series now tied 1-1. You know, we'll see what happens. We're going back to Miami now. But yeah, it's interesting to see, you know, what can these Celtics do now? We you know, a little bit of adversity here. What do we see this Celtics team that's been the most consistent, the best team all year? What are we doing now? Right. The Heat, we know what the Heat can do. This Heat team, it doesn't matter. Jimmy Butler, no Jimmy Butler. They play with the tenacity. They play with the grit that they don't care who they throw out there on the court.
That's their coach mentality.
Yeah, they can win. They can win ball games no matter who's out there. So, Matt, what do you think about this series?
Yeah, you know, like you said, Miami is a team that just always gives Boston fits, no matter what. But right. the regular season this year, Boston 2-0. Oh,
yeah.
They also won, you know, the opener here in the series. So, mm-hmm. I do think Boston in the end has way too much firepower, especially with Miami not out Jimmy Butler right now. If he mm-hmm. can't get back into the series,
right.
You know, I don't like their chances. Like you said, they're going to be pesky.
Oh,
they're going to keep games close.
Right.
But I think Boston has too much firepower.
Yeah. I gotta agree. I mean, I'll admit we didn't talk much about each of the individual series last week on the show. We talked more of kind of the play-in games last year or last week. So I had written in my notes, I'll admit I had the Celtics sweeping this thing 4-0. Obviously that's not going to happen, but I still think the Celtics are going to win this series. You know, but now going to be a little bit tougher. Now you got to go to Miami and
that's what Boston needed was a wake up call. Just to, hey, you know, the playoffs are for real. It's going to be a battle every night.
I also saw there was a bet going on, I don't know if it was all the sports books, but FanDuel in particular had a bet or, you know, a thing you could throw money on. Would the Celtics win every game in the playoffs? Well, obviously that's already out the window. Now the one and the other one is out the window as well, because it was, would the Celtics win every home game in the playoffs? Well, apparently not. Yeah. So, you know, both of those, you know, kind of high odds to, you know, just throw some money on to, you know, say, hey, what the heck?
I don't know why anybody would bet on stuff like that.
Right.
Like even the best team I consider the best team in history, the Chicago Bulls at 72-10, didn't win every game in the playoffs.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah.
The Golden State Warriors didn't win every game
in the playoffs. Exactly. It's tough to sweep it all the way through, you know, including the NBA finals. So, but yeah, it's one of those just, you know, high odds, throw a dollar on it or $5. And, you know, if it hits, whatever. Right. But yeah, obviously those are out the window already. So then continuing with the East, I'm going to continue with the number 2 New York Knicks taking on the 7th seeded Philadelphia 76ers. The Knicks up 2-0 in this series. You know, the Knicks were 3-1 in the regular season against Philadelphia. But in the 3 victories that the Knicks had, Joel Embiid did not play. Mm-hmm. Obviously, in both of these games so far, he has been present and has played pretty well.
But hobbled.
But hobbled at the same time. You know, of course, you know, it wouldn't be the NBA playoffs if we weren't talking about Embiid being injured at this point. Right. It seems like a staple anymore. You know, obviously game 3 now, you know, going to be happening tonight, maybe on right now. Matt, what do you think? You think Philadelphia can get it turned around? I mean, it seems like this 76ers team just always falling short of expectations.
Right. Well, I think the biggest issue here is the health. Mm-hmm. I mean, Embiid hobbled. Yeah, he's playing well and admirable, but he can't be the only one that does it for this Philadelphia team. Yep. They need more support. They need more to help him.
Right.
New York, young, fast, agile.
Yeah.
The only thing that kind of makes this interesting is New York's best player in Julius Randle mm-hmm. also out injured.
Right,
so, you know, you've got a hobbled Embiid, you got an out Randle.
Right.
So, I mean, anything can happen. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think New York just – I think they're too young, mm-hmm. too athletic.
Yep.
I think Philadelphia and with Embiid hobbled, it's going to be too slow to kind of keep up a fast-paced game. Mm-hmm. So I like New York's chances. I think Philadelphia gets a couple of wins in the series,
mm-hmm. yeah.
but I like New York's chances to advance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have the New York Knicks advancing in this one. I do have it going seven games in this one, but I like the Knicks to get the win. I think at the same time, without Julius Randle, you know, the Knicks did make a trade, you know, to get, you know, bring in the kid from Toronto in there. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think they just got a lot of long, lengthy bodies that they can throw at Embiid. And
right.
I think that, you know, he's played well. Like I said, he's
had like 30 some points.
Yeah, he's averaging almost 32 points in this series and has played almost 40 minutes a game already in this series for a guy that missed 2 months, you know, with a knee issue. Coming back and, you know, was able to play kind of the last six games of the regular season. So he's not coming into the series totally cold. But again, for a big guy like that, you know, the injury history and actually injured himself in this series at one point and thought,
well, I thought he was done.
Yeah.
The way he fell to the ground.
Right. It's like, I thought it was over. That's it. But he found a way to come back and, you know, has played through it and, you know, whatever. So you got to, you know, commend him for that. But yeah, I just think too many, you know, OG Anunoby is the guy that they traded for from Toronto. They, you know, got, you know, too many lengthy bodies, I think, to throw at Embiid. I think it's just going to be a wear and tear on, you know, on him not, you know, being there for the last couple of months. I think it's, yeah, he's just going to be fatigued by the, you know,
right.
The longer this series goes, I think the worse it is for Philadelphia, you know, for Philadelphia to win this series, they needed to steal one in New York, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They weren't able to do that. The longer this thing goes, I think it favors the Knicks more than Philadelphia. well, then wrapping up then, you know, the last couple of series in the East, we got the Milwaukee Bucks taking on the Indiana Pacers, tied 1-1 in this one. And, you know, the Pacers were 4-1 in the regular season, but ironically, these two teams have not met since the Pacers traded for another Toronto Raptor in Pascal Siakam and never played each other when Doc Rivers took over as the head coach for the Milwaukee Bucks. So they played all of these games against each other, which is kind of surprising, five games
right. So
early in the season before all of that kind of happened.
Right.
But, the Bucks are up against, you know, a Pacers team that can light it up from 3-point range. You want to talk about health. You know, there's no timetable for Giannis's return for the Bucks. We know what happened to him last year when he wasn't able to play. They got upset in the first round against a pesky Heat team. I think the Bucks are in trouble again.
Yeah.
What do you think, Matt?
Yeah, I'm with you. This Indiana team, I mean, they're a team that showed at the halfway point where the midseason tournament,
right.
you know, they went all the way to the championship and that thing.
Lost the Lakers.
Lakers. So, yeah. I mean, they're a team that when it comes time to the lights
to
are shining,
yeah.
they're playing. They're playing hard,
right.
Flying around. And Milwaukee, they're on the wrong side of things here
mm-hmm.
lately.
Mm-hmm.
Really, ever since they brought Doc Rivers in, this team has been
kind of up and down.
An up and down dumpster fire.
Yep.
Now you got Giannis out.
Right.
Yeah, I think Milwaukee, if they get through this series, it'll be a miracle.
Yeah.
But even then, you got to not like their chances to go any further after this.
Right.
So,
you
know, maybe you just cash it in and get yourself healthy for next year.
Absolutely. To me, it's kind of interesting because the biggest weakness that this Pacers team has is they don't guard the paint at all. They give up almost 60% of opponent shots are in the paint. That doesn't spell well for Milwaukee Bucks team that Giannis, who averaged a little over 20 points per game in the paint, is not there. And so a thing that they can exploit against this Pacers team, your biggest component or your biggest, you know, person that can exploit that weakness, not in the lineup.
Right.
You're going back to Indiana. You know, I have it written down. I like the Pacers to win this series, six games in this one. I just think too much. If Giannis is not able to come back at all in this series, it's lights out for this Bucks team. But if he is able to come back, even maybe at 50% or whatever, I think it still gives the Bucks a chance. I still think I like the Pacers, even if Giannis is able to come back. I think I still like the Pacers to win this series. For the Bucks to have any chance, they need Giannis to come back and, you know, to be some resemblance of himself, you know.
Right.
But if he's not able to go, yeah, this Pacers team got the first round here. Then the hometown Cleveland Cavaliers taking on the Orlando Magic. Cavaliers up 2-0 in this in this series. And again, a series that I thought would be a little bit closer, or a little bit, you know, back and forth. The Cavs have, you know, have played well, especially on the defensive side of things, allowing less than 90 points in both games from an Orlando Magic team. Matt, what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, you know, this Cleveland team, they're playing really well right now. Mm-hmm. They're young guys, and then veteran
Donovan Mitchell
playing lights out. I think they're going to be a tough out for Orlando. Right. You know, but the series hasn't really started yet because no home team has lost.
right.
You know, we'll see if Cleveland takes one in Orlando, mm-hmm. then.
Yeah.
Lights out, 3-0. Game over.
Yep. Yeah. 3-1, 3-0, whatever.
But, if Orlando takes both at home, I like the series to go 7.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Orlando's got a good young core themselves. Mm-hmm. Yep. They can keep a fast-paced game. They can go up and down the court.
Yeah.
I think Cleveland does have more overall talent, more scorers.
Yeah.
So I like Cleveland's chances, but I think this thing goes 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah. I got the Cavs coming out on top in this series, and I had it in 7 games. Yeah. I mean, I thought, again, would be a little bit closer. Obviously, we got game 3 tonight back in Orlando. But, you know, you talk about these two teams, they're almost similar style play. They like to play defense. They don't really score a lot. And it shows in the stats. Orlando, they're 21-2. When they hold opponents under 100 points. Mm-hmm. Cleveland is 14-0, now 16-0 when they hold opponents under 100 points. The Orlando Magic are 2-12 when they don't score 100 points. And Cleveland's 1-9 when they don't score 100 points. So you talk about teams that 100 points is kind of the, you know, make or break point for, well,
that used to be the thing. Back in the day when I'd watch the Bulls games on WGN, the announcer would always say, "Oh, first team to 100, that's the team that's going to win every time."
Exactly, yeah. So this is like old school basketball here for these two teams, you know, matching up against each other. But ironically, none of them have scored over 100 points. You know, the Cavs have got 2 wins, but they didn't score 100 points either. Right. So it just did a better job at not letting the Magic score as many points either. But so we'll see. I just think, similar makeup for both of these teams. We'll see what happens in Orlando. But yeah, I think this could be an exciting series if Orlando is able to get a couple of games back at home. All right, well then moving out west, wrapping things up. We got the number 1 seeded Oklahoma City Thunder taking on the 8 seeded New Orleans Pelicans. The Thunder up 2-0 in this series. Took game 1 in a close fashion, 94-92. Then game 2 just lights out, blew this New Orleans Pelicans team out, 124-92. Obviously, you talk about injuries. The Pelicans' no Zion in this series so far. Questions of whether he'll be able to play at all in this series as well after getting injured in the play-in, play-in game. I'm honestly surprised. You know, this Thunder team has been obviously the best team in the West, you know, throughout the entire season, but not a ton of playoff experience whatsoever.
Right.
What did we didn't know what we were going to get here, you know, in the first round. Thought potentially maybe a first round upset depending on who they matched up against. But man, they've really proven me wrong, you know, in this first round that they seemed like the real deal. What's your thoughts?
I mean, had New Orleans had Zion.
Yeah. I think it's be close.
That makes a huge difference.
Right.
Without that, New Orleans doesn't have a chance. Mm-hmm. I look for this to be a sweep.
Yep.
But you know, OKC, they've been just playing lights out. They can score from anywhere on the floor. Mm-hmm. Pretty decent defensive team. They do it all.
Yeah.
Young, athletic.
Right.
I mean,
got scorers at all the positions.
It'll be interesting to see if they can keep it up, though.
Right.
I mean,
you got
Denver right on their heels,
And
but then you know the top three in the West are really all young kind of teams that I know Denver won it a year ago, but they're still young and haven't been a ton of playoff experience.
Right. Yeah.
So it's interesting how the West has really turned this year
shifted
to these young teams being the best in the West. So
we'll
see what OKC can do.
Right. Yeah. That transitions us then to the Denver Nuggets, the defending NBA champions taking on the Los Angeles Lakers. Mm-hmm. Again, two teams that faced off against each other in the Western Conference Finals last year. And a team that the Lakers have not been able to find, figure out. I think it's up to now 10-0 in the last 10, 2 years or something like that they have not been able to beat this Nuggets team. Got swept in the regular season and so far have been swept in the playoffs. You know, Nuggets took game one, game two, the Nuggets hit a buzzer beater to win the game, a game that the Lakers were up by 20 at one point in that game two. Again, an opportunity where you felt like the Lakers, that was their best shot at stealing a game, and the Nuggets still found a way to win. And I think the Lakers are fighting an uphill battle here.
And the most telling thing to me is the Lakers came out of that game, and instead of being, you know, well, we'll get you next time, right. Well, the officials screwed us. Right, you know, right, it was bad calls. Right, this wasn't great.
Right.
You start complaining about the officials, right. And that's the reason you lost. Uh-huh. I don't like your chances to win anything. Yeah, you know, so I think Denver, LA is going to get one. Mm-hmm, I think LeBron has too much pride. Right, Anthony Davis is too good of a player. Right. LA will get one, but this is going to be a gentleman's sweep five game series.
Yeah, this Denver team is just, they beat you in so many different ways. They got too much talent, you know, at different positions, and, you know, they just find ways to win games. Yeah. And whether it's lower scoring, higher scoring, they can do it all right, just to, you know, turn it on when they need to get a win. So this Lakers team really got their hands full with a Denver Nuggets team that's, you know, again, one of the hottest teams and best teams in the West this year. And then continuing on, we got the Minnesota Timberwolves, the 3 seed there, another young, surprising team that kind of came out of nowhere, taking on, you know, a Phoenix Suns team that, again, I thought would put up a better fight through the first two games. But the Timberwolves lead the series 2-0. But, you know, the Suns were 3-0 against the Timberwolves in the regular season, and here we are, the Timberwolves up 2-0, dominating fashion in game one, and pretty similar in game two, somewhat of a dominating fashion. If the Suns have any life, you think, or you know,
I don't know where all their offense is. I mean, they went out and signed all, you know, these guys to be an offensive juggernaut, and they're just not getting it done.
Right.
You know, I think what really hurts them is they don't have the size to match up. Mm-hmm. But you know, you've got
Rudy Cat
and Gobert. Yeah. It's a tough matchup for Phoenix.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you know, I don't think Phoenix has enough to. To get this thing done. I think, again, though, you got Kevin Durant. He's got a ton of pride, just kind of like the LeBron situation. He's going to will them to at least a win, but Minnesota's just got way too much offense, too young, too fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Phoenix has been injury prone all year long. They haven't played as a unit all year long, where Minnesota's had a lot more time together this year. And I think that's helped a lot here at this point,
too. Yeah, definitely. Anthony Edwards, again, not this Minnesota team, not a ton of playoff experience, you know, and their young guy in Anthony Edwards has showed out in this series, has really, you know, come in with a bang in this series and played really, really well. You know, yeah, it'll be. My prediction, you know, before the series started was Suns in 6 games. Well, for that to happen, the Suns got to win all 4 games here, the next 4 games. It's going to be tough. Obviously, they get to go back home, play in Phoenix the next couple of games, but they got their hands full. This Timberwolves team, again, another young team that I don't think anybody expected to be here at this point in the season, and then taking on a veteran team like the Phoenix Suns. Definitely did not see them, you know, dominating the first two games like they have. They look like they're, you know, a team that wants to stick around and make a deep playoff run. Well, then our last series in the West before we wrap up the show, we got, you know, a star-studded battle between the Los Angeles Clippers and the Dallas Mavericks. You know, a series that's tied 1-1. You know, the Clippers 2-1 in the regular season. You know, the Clippers game one pretty much dominated the score. A little bit closer than what it really was. Game two.
And they did it without Kawhi.
Right, yeah. Kawhi comes back in game two, and the Mavericks find a way to win a tough, grinded-out, gritty-type game. You know, now the series heads back to Dallas. You know, what's your thoughts on this one, Matt?
Well, the thing with this Clippers team is what team's going to show up. Mm-hmm. They've been one of the most inconsistent teams in basketball all season long. Yeah. Their stars show up one game, and then next game they're all ice cold and nobody can score.
Right.
You know, you'd think with Paul George, Kawhi Leonard,
James Harden,
Russell Westbrook.
Right.
That, you know, any given night, one of those guys should be able to go for 30, 40, but they just don't. I can't. Yeah. It's like when one's bad, they're all bad.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And when one's good, they're all good. It's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is a series that I think will go 7 games. Mm-hmm. Luka is just too good.
Yeah. Yeah.
You got Kyrie who's starting to play well now again too. Yeah. So this Dallas team's gonna be a tough out for the Clippers. Mm-hmm. I think this thing goes 7. I think home court helps though, and that down the stretch when those two teams were both battling and fighting for position, I think that could actually make the difference. Mm-hmm. I think the Clippers in seven with the home court.
Right. Yeah, this is going to be an interesting series. Again, two teams that are somewhat familiar with each other, have matched up in the first round of the playoffs, several times here the last couple of playoff, postseasons. It'll be interesting. You talk about star power. You got it in this series. I mean, you got Luka, you got Kyrie, you got Kawhi, you got James Harden, you got Paul George, you got Russell Westbrook. These six guys from both these teams have combined for 47 All-Star appearances, two MVP awards, two NBA Finals MVPs, and six scoring titles between all of those guys. We got scoring, we got playoffs, we got championships, we got it all. I mean, this is a series that's loaded with
not talent. As many championships as you would think.
Right,
though.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Two. Kawhi had the one, yeah, and Kyrie had the one.
Yes, so it's not as much success at the NBA Finals championship level, but it's still lots of star power, lots of scoring, lots of opportunities. Again, what are we gonna get? The Clippers dealing with some injuries here. Obviously Kawhi didn't go game one and they got a win. Game two, he's able to go and they lose. So we'll see what his health looks like going forward. James Harden dealing with some injury, issues as well. So see what he, is able to contribute or do for this Clippers team. But yeah, I think this one goes the distance. I think the Mavericks find a way to steal one game seven on the road. But yeah, this is going to be an exciting series. I think probably of all the series, maybe the best one out of the series, I think, in my opinion, East and West, that could, really be an exciting matchup between these two teams. So we will see what happens. The rest of the games playing out this week. So we'll be talking NHL and NBA playoffs the rest of the way, all the way till we crown champions in both of those, both of those leagues. So stick with us. We'll be, giving you your playoff fix in both of those leagues. So, all right, well, that's it for our show this week. We appreciate you listening to Fired Up with your hosts, Colton Cow.
Matt Cordes.
We hope you enjoyed our episode this week. And, if you want to hear other topics for future episodes or, you just got a burning sports question you want to hear us talk about on the show, do feel free to reach out to us on our different social medias. We have an Instagram if you search for at FiredUp_podcast. Or you can find us over on Facebook if you search for FiredUp, Sports Podcast. And as always, you can head over to our website at www.firedup1.podbean.com, where you can find all of our past episodes and, just a little bit of information about the show. And as always, you can find this episode and all of our past episodes on pretty much any podcast platform you can think of: Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. So all the big players in the podcast game, you can find our show. So appreciate y'all listening. And as always, stay fired up.